the high price of carelessness in flight and in pre-flight. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome in to the Aero News special feature. My guest is CFI Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. And today we're going to be discussing some accident analyses in the May issue of Bob's newsletter. We're back on stall spin accidents because they're so common and can be triggered in so many ways. Bob, thanks for taking some time out for our listeners today.
Paul, I enjoy being here with you.
All right, let's talk about a couple of things in the May edition of Over the Airwaves. You had a couple of articles that were just forehead slappers. One of them has to do with stall spin accidents, and that involved an instructor on board in a Mooney. We think of the Mooney as a very competent airplane, and we think that, surely if we have an instructor on board, this is how we are supposed to explore the limits without getting into trouble. But what happened in this one?
Well, yeah, I'm not sure I buy that notion that if we have an instructor aboard that, you know, everything's going to be fine. Unfortunately, we have far too many training accidents with instructors on board. But this is a classic example, in my opinion, of where aeronautical decision-making was the fault, not a lack of maneuvers, skills-based training. This was a situation where a flight instructor and a student went up in a Mooney, and the idea, the training objective in that particular day was to accomplish some slow flight training. And in the process of doing the slow flight training, apparently the airplane stalled and crashed with fatal consequences. Both on board died. Now, why did this happen? It happened because, according to the radar returns reported in the NTSB report, they were operating between 1,400 and 900 feet AGL when they were doing the training maneuvers. Now, let's look at this seriously. Here we are doing slow flight, operating at the edge of stall, and we're doing this. Aside from the fact that this is an illegal maneuver at this altitude, because slow flight is in fact a performance maneuver, and all performance maneuvers must be done according to regulation at or above 1,500 feet throughout the entire maneuver. They began the maneuver apparently at 1,400 feet AGL and were, as I said earlier, down to 900 feet AGL practicing this maneuver. So that when the stall occurred, Bob Hoover likely could not have recovered at 900 feet AGL. So where was the earliest link in this accident chain? It was at the flight instructor's decision, apparently, to do this at such a low altitude. I remember vividly, I mean, as if it were yesterday, losing an engine while doing this very same type of training in a Cessna Corvallis, but we were at 9,000 feet when we lost the engine, and it took us almost 3,000 feet to recover the engine. But the only saving grace in all of that was we had lots and lots of altitude. Why one would do this kind of maneuver so close to the ground is, you know, is defying the odds.
Well, and I have to look at the fact that one of the arguments used in not teaching stall spin is that where it's happening, where it's being a problem, is on that turn from base to final. And people say, well, you know, if you're at or below pattern altitude, it's unrecoverable. Well, here's a couple people who were up in a Mooney at pattern altitude and elected to do this intentionally. That kind of highlights to me just, you know, how marginal decision this was.
Well, that's it. And so much of what we do, and we keep seeing this now, and studies now are being showing this, that our accident rate is not a result of the inability to perform maneuvers. Our accident rate today is coming from just flat-out poor aeronautical decision-making. You know, we just do not see enough of this kind of training going into the training syllabus. I mean, there were times when dead stick landings, simulated power losses where the instructor would idle the engine down and ask a student, you know, all right, now where are you going to put it? And they continue the scenario all the way down to the point where the airplane hits power lines in going into an unfamiliar field as part of this training exercise. You know, good aeronautical decision making says if you want to practice this kind of maneuver, do it over an airport. If you want to take it down low, or break off the training exercise, you know, at least 500 to 800 feet above the ground. Where we get the notion that we're going to tempt fate by doing these things so close to the ground that if something goes wrong, And Murphy's always at work in an airplane. We have no place to go. You know, that's what's unfortunately killing so many of us.
Bob, when we come back from the break, I want to talk about another accident you discuss in the May edition. It really didn't need to happen. Bob Miller is my guest. We'll be back with more in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
This is a story of two pilots. Our first guy, the one with Garmin Waas GPS, he just arrived home from a trip, ready to enjoy a nice home-cooked meal with his supermodel girlfriend.
Chérie, viens près de moi.
But our other guy, the pilot without Waas, well, he couldn't quite make it home. Had to divert to an airport with an ILS approach. So now it's dinner from a vending machine in some crummy pilot's lounge. You know which pilot you want to be. Garmin Waas GPS. Follow the leader.
Chérie.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Plack, talking with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves about safety issues raised in the May issue, in which carelessness or distraction during flight or during pre-flight have brought fatal results. Bob, you called this next one Simple Pre-Flight Oversights Can Kill. This one involved a Cessna 210, and it sounds like it could have struck pretty close to home.
Well, here was a case where this is near and dear to my heart because I own and operate a Cessna 210, but it certainly can happen to any of us in any kind of an airplane. The individual was no doubt diligent in doing his pre-flight thorough pre-flight check, and what he simply forgot to do was to return the oil filler cap to the place and secure it on the engine before taking off. And it wasn't properly secured, and when he took off, or it wasn't there in the first place, I'm not sure exactly recalling the accident or the incident, but shortly after takeoff, of course, now he has a windscreen that's completely immersed with vision-blinding oil, and the pilot, in an attempt to recover the situation, got himself going a little too slow, a little too steep, and wound up in a stall spin accident and, of course, lost his life in the process. Where did that error begin? You know, and that error began clearly when perhaps interrupted in his pre-flight inspection. He had pulled the oil cover to check the oil and didn't secure it. I recall just a few weeks ago, a pet peeve of mine is whenever I see an airplane out on the ramp with a tow bar attached to its nose gear and nothing else. It's just sitting out there attached to his nose gear and was not removed at the point where the towing had been completed. You know, it just invites a disaster where somebody's going to get in the airplane, take off with the tow bar still attached to the nose gear. And so I deliberately interrupted the pilot, one of my students, in his pre-flight action by distracting him for a moment right at that point where I thought he was going to remove the tow bar. Well, I effectively distracted him. He got in the airplane, and just before starting the engine, you know, I gave him the signal to stop in place, and I invited him to get out of the airplane and asked him how far he intended to fly with the tow bar attached to his nose wheel. You know, whatever we do in the pre-flight inspection, I think we just have to be more diligent in not allowing ourselves to be interrupted in that process. Because as this tragic accident shows, if we are, fatal consequences could very easily result.
You know, I don't remember this being a big point of contention in my primary flight training, but just in my discussions with other pilots of small aircraft, you know, I participate on internet forums and so forth. And, you know, I've run across a number of people who have said that, you know, they have to have a policy when they're doing a pre-flight inspection of no distractions. You know, if somebody walks up and has, hey, that's a neat airplane, tell me about, the finger goes up and they say, give me 12 minutes. I'll be with you in 12 minutes and continue on the checklist. And, I guess, you know, it seems rude to some people, but I guess so do funerals. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, and I'm not holier than thou in any of these cases. I have taken off with baggage doors unsecured. You know, I've taken off with seatbelts hanging out the door. I over the years, there have been a number of things that I've done, and, fortunately with not too serious a consequence, but they all result in one of these statements as you're flying along with a seatbelt slapping on the outside of the door. You know, it's kind of a two-word epitaph, and I won't repeat it here, but you say to yourself, where in the world did you go wrong? How did you let something like that happen? And it can happen just so quickly and so easily. And this one is particularly nasty because, once you do lose that forward vision, it's tough not to panic. You don't know what's coming next. You don't know if the engine is going to fall out of the airplane, and we start panicking, and oftentimes with a bad outcome. How could this have been prevented? Clearly, we know the answer. Just be sure that things are done right. We try to do something in the flight school after doing a very thorough pre-flight per the POH where we're going down checklists. We do something called a flow check, and it's nothing new. Airline guys do it all the time. It's after all the checklists have been performed, then you just sit peacefully in the cockpit just for a moment, and you just pass your hand, up and across the panel in a prescribed direction, just looking things over one last time before launching, and mentally saying to yourself, all right, outside the airplane, is everything properly secured? Do I have the chocks? That's another thing I've tried to take off with chocks still under the wheels. These are dumb mistakes that had we stopped and thought about it long enough and weren't in quite such a rush to get out, but we can prevent them from happening.
Well, Bob, hopefully we will. And we appreciate your bringing these things up into our attention. I mean, it seems a little repetitious sometimes, but not as repetitious as the accidents do that prompt these conversations. And we will.
That's right.
We'll talk to you again next Monday.
Thanks, Paul.
The June issue of Bob Miller's newsletter just went up this weekend at overtheairwaves.com. You'll also find a link to the May issue, which prompted our topics today, and details on how to get an email each time a new free issue becomes available. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.